Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello friends and welcome to your Friday edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, your pre-match companion as we build up to the trip to Everton. I am Mark Heath, joined this morning, by Stewie Watson and Big Dog AJ. Friends, I'm delighted. I'm in a really good mood this morning because I've done what science cannot do. I've reversed the ageing process. Oh yes. You may not think it by looking at this. If you're watching on video, this looks like the face of a rather haggard middle-aged man. But according to my very fancy scales, which I stand on every Friday morning to weigh in, find my body fat percentage, my viscous fat, the weight of my bones, my protein rate, my metabolic rate is that of a 33-year-old man, Watson. So I am actually 11 years younger than my rather haggard face suggests. Internally, I have the body of an 11-year younger man. How does that make you feel?
Me? Why are we addressing this to me?
I thought you might be impressed. You like health and training and that as well, don't you?
I do, but not. I can't be asked with calorie counting. Life's too short. Life's too short to be, in my opinion, to be stepping on scales and monitoring all those things that you just said.
It's boring,
yeah,
but it's my life.
Be healthy, but come on. We'll all be dead at some point. Enjoy yourself.
We will.
Yeah. But I am impressed. I know it's a big part of your life, and I'm not demeaning it in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, it did sound a little bit demeaning, but we'll look over it. AJ, you're of course far too young to even worry about this stuff. When I was your age, I was eating, drinking, smoking, everything. Mm-hmm. I wish I hadn't done, because those were my could have been my peak years. So you're not at all impressed by this haggard old man taking.
I did all those things. Yeah, I've done all those things this morning before the pod. Yeah, at the same time.
That's your pre-pod warm-up.
Yeah, that's just how I get in the zone, you know. That's how you gotta. It's how you gotta get a feel for it. Yeah. You said that your body age was 33. I'm yet to know how to count that high. So
I bet your knees are already 33, mate.
Yeah, I'm feeling it already. It's all the drinking and smoking and hard drugs I've done before the pod. Yeah,
exactly. The other thing I've been looking forward to, which is put me in a good mood this morning, I'm hoping it's gonna be worth the wait. I don't know if you've listened to the pod from earlier this week, AJ, but Stu absolutely nailed a Geordie accent, and we're reflecting on covering a match at St James's Park, and he said, when Alex is back, you must put him on the spot and get him to do his Scouse accent because he's got a really good one. So, by way of leading into this trip to Everton, to Liverpool, I want you to do us some Scouse, please.
What am I supposed to say?
Whatever you want, mate. Just give us some Scouse. You've got family links to Liverpool. You're always
really
banging
hard
on about.
Yeah. Always banging on about. I've never done this on a live format. This could be awful. I could offend like the entire city, which could be really, really bad. I definitely can't do a Geordie.
Come on.
Throat's a little bit off as
don't,
well.
Yeah, don't overthink it. Yeah.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, it's big news this weekend. Ipswich Town travelling up to Goodison Park. It's the penultimate match against Everton at the stadium. If you've been up there, you know how important this place is. It's a staple of Liverpool life. For every toffee, not for every cupite, but everyone in that area in the northwest, if you bleed blue, you know what that means.
Very good.
Wow. Wow. Mate,
I definitely can do that, better, but
that's better than I could ever have expected, and also a lot longer. When I do an accent, I keep it up for about two or three words. You did a whole intro to this game. And also, I like the way your face changed into a slight scowl while you were doing it.
It's part of the act. But yeah, I can definitely do better. You never know. There's a whole weekend of content to come. There's probably going to be a behind the scenes where Ross will make me do the whole thing in the scowl section.
I loved it.
So keep your eyes peeled, friends.
That was well worth the wait. Right then, friends. Obviously, building up to Everton today. That all started with the press conferences yesterday, where the boys chatted to Kieran McKenna and Jack Taylor. Various lines emerging from. Stu, where do you want to kick us off with this? What was most interesting to thine ears yesterday as you interviewed Kieran? Don't say there was nothing.
No, there was something. We always make sure there's something, even if we're getting into that little running out of things to discuss, little nether zone of the sort of down, but a bit too early to fire the starter gun on the summer, although we have tried a little bit of contracts and signings and all that sort of stuff. Kieran's reluctant to reflect too much on the season, and we've still got four games left, etc., etc. Headline from the press conference is, the squad is still
in bits.
Shot to pieces, decimated, effed.
Yeah, FUBAR. Okay, that's good.
No, it's not.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. That is not good. Alex, you trialed something. Should we bring that in now, being as we're talking about it? The injury crisis. There was no mention of new injuries yesterday, was that, boys? It was just basically McKenna saying the same.
Very vague, basically. Yeah. I don't want to go through everybody individually because it shows our hand too much, but essentially we're in the very similar position as we were as going into the Arsenal game. Chuck Ben-Johnson into the mix now, who's joined Leif Davis in being suspended. So there might be one or two come back from that long list. The fact that Jens and Amari were both on the bench last weekend would suggest they're the ones that are closest, but are they going to want to take any risks with people in dead rubber matches at this stage of the season? Not convinced. So, we worked out 13 fully fit senior outfield players to pick from for the 10 positions last weekend. Not improved too much. So I do think that's kind of been, I know people say we don't want to go down the excuses route and everyone has injuries, but Ipswich have had probably more than their fair share of injuries. And maybe that's a little bit of, you know, they say these things even themselves out over the course of a season. Maybe they even themselves out over a course of a few seasons.
Several seasons, yeah.
Over the Championship, I know there was the Hurst setback in January, but in general, wasn't too bad on the injury front, was it? So, as we keep saying, they needed absolutely everything to go their way to stand even half a chance this season. And injuries have certainly not gone their way. Not just injuries in quantity, but also in the way they've been grouped per position. Mm. You know, you've got both left backs out at the moment. But the right-hand side, I mean, you know, Burns or Benne, now Philogene, Hutchinson, Ben-Johnson thrown into the mix. It's ridiculous.
Going to be interesting to see. Obviously, we'll come on to that in due course when we start talking about Everton and who might play. But in terms of who could play, if there was an injury 11, AJ, you've put together a potential starting side just through the injured players at Ipswich Town. What are they? Who are they?
Well,
tell us.
It's an unavailable 11. I can't.
Unavailable. Okay, it's not injury. Fair enough.
Which already hints at who two of these players are going to be. Yeah. Sengol, Arrow Muric, did his shoulder, had some injections, had another injury, not going to play again this season. Fair enough. Just a little word with this one. So this is a 4-2-3-1 formation I've gone for here. The positions are a little bit all over the place, but allow it. I've tried my best, all right? Right back, Wes Burns. Kind of had to do it, that's fine. He did his ACL at Liverpool in January and won't be back for a while. Right centre back Axel Tuanzebe missed the Newcastle game, so he's going into that slot. Hopefully he'll be back to play Everton, but I'm not holding my breath. Left centre back Kieran McKenna's mentioned he could play centre back potentially, so I'm going Connor Townsend.
Okay.
So not centre back in a five, but he's going to have to play in a four here because, you know, options. So he goes into that one.
Part you've got a real selection headache here, haven't you, with the unavailable 11?
It's probably more know players unavailable. Like. Yeah.
Damn it. Left back in that back four, Leif Davis, who's on to match two of his three-match ban. Mm-hmm. Midfield. One side, you're going to have Calvin Phillips, who's just vanished off the face of the earth with an injury in the Achilles area.
Yeah.
Who knows what that is. Next to him, he has played midfield before. I've seen him do it in the flesh multiple times, so allow me to put him there. Ben Johnson.
Okay, I wonder where Ben Johnson's going to crop up. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's going in there. front four kind of picks itself here, and they're all roughly in position as well, which is nice. On the right, Chiog Bene did his Achilles, wasn't it, at Brentford. Through the middle, Nathan Broadhead is going in the 10. On the left, we've got Jaden Philogene, who did his MCL at Chelsea. And then up front, Sammy Smodics leading the line with his on-again, off-again ankle injury that he's probably rushed back from a little bit too early. So there's your team, 4-2-3-1. Muric in goal, Burns, Twanzebe, Townsend and Davis at the back, Johnson and Phillips in midfield, Ogbene, Broadhead and Philogene behind Sammy Smodics, your unavailable 11.
I fancy that side to win the championship next season, actually, thinking about it.
Would they be the team of fit Town players? Probably not because of the out-of-position stuff, but...
If only there were a few more available, we could have a much stronger side.
Anyway. Well, there might be. Who knows?
Who knows? There's still four games
left. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Let's not make too much light of it because it is a bad thing, isn't it, when you look at it? But hey, that's what we're here for. A bit of fun. My phone? No, it's fine. It's not my phone. Stewie, what else can we talk about from the press conference yesterday? You spoke to him about Jens. You also spoke to him about Paul Merson and others criticising style of play. Are there those two? You want to kick us off?
I'll start with the style of play stuff because that's what I asked him about. I just thought it was timely after, you say, really the Paul Merson quotes were the strongest of the kind of ex-players / pundits. I think, in my opinion, unfairly kind of lumping Ipswich in, particularly with Southampton, this kind of, they've come up and they've had the audacity to try and play football in the Premier League. It's a disgrace. And you've had Roy Keane doing his kind of his usual shtick of just make yourself hard to beat. And there's been that sort of general tone from a lot of the pundits who I do have sympathy for, because it's impossible to have an in-depth view of certainly 20 football clubs in the Premier League deeper if you're, you know, employed to talk about the EFL as well. Their focus, understandably, is on the top echelons of the league. So they probably only see a few sort of highlights and the odd game of Ipswich here and there. And but it has felt a little bit sort of easy and cheap to kind of just say, well, Ipswich have just come up and tried to play too much. And that overlooks the fact that we've just all the injury situation that we've just talked about, for one. And also the fact that I just don't think that's right. And I know it seems to have garnered a fair bit of, even from amongst Ipswich fans, going, yeah, actually, yeah, that's bang on. That's right. We've been too naive. We've been too open. But I do think they've mixed it up a little bit, as I said on previous pods. So anyway, I put that to Kieran McKenna. What was his response to these sort of comments? And he kind of echoed what I just said there, really. Just, yeah, water off a duck's back. They have to have an opinion. It is what it is, but launched a defence of, I do think we've mixed it up. I do think we've been pragmatic at times, and actually he's been more pragmatic than he's wanted to be at times. That is not the DNA, the blueprint of what he believes has got made the club successful to this point and will make them successful further down the line. But as we've just seen last weekend at Newcastle, prime example, he's played four centre-halves across the back five. He's played Ben Johnson, a sort of a right back in a wing back role. You know, it was a pretty defensive team in terms of personnel, and that has been the case in several games. We've seen Alex Palmer come in and start going much longer from goal kicks. So to say Ipswich have come up and tried to sort of play their way in every single game and it's come back to bite them, I just think is plain wrong. And that was kind of McKenna's view on it.
You call it easy and cheap punditry. Someone else may call it lazy. AJ, you've written a piece about this, and we've not actually had a chance to talk to you about it. So there is definitely this narrative, isn't there, that when you come up, as Stu says, you can't play football. You haven't got top raw players. You can't play football. Just get it down the other end. Make yourself hard to beat. Do that for a season. Finish 17th. Dead simple. What's your take on this criticism of Ipswich?
I think Luton have kind of been an interesting example with this one, because they came up with such an identifiably direct style of play, and it was obviously quite successful. It took them to the penultimate day of last season in terms of their survival bid. They won a lot of good games, despite the fact that their team in general wasn't that good. And I think a lot of people look at them and say, well, that's the way to do it, despite the fact they didn't do it. So, yeah, with the style of play, as I've kind of, I echo same thoughts that Stu's just said, with I don't really feel like it's been one of the bigger issues behind Town's relegation. And you've got to factor in all the things that he said. Also, they haven't always been this open attacking team. And there have been games where, you know, you look at individual errors and bits like that, because those are bits that get mentioned. Town don't rank towards like the top end for individual errors. They rank sixth when I did the piece. Of their 12, five were from Aro Muric mistakes. Two of them came from the same game. They're not like a continuous trail of playing out from the back and getting caught. I can only really think of maybe one or two where they've conceded like that. You talk about going direct. Ipswich with their goal kicks are actually one of the more direct teams in the league. They were when Aro Muric was taking goal kicks, and I would imagine it's become even more so since Alex Palmer's come in. So I just think that it's probably something that's dragged on from the Championship, because when people who haven't followed Town that much in the Premier League, you know, they get promoted, and you look back at what we saw last season, they look at the Wes Burns goal, great example, free-flowing, open football, with that finish with the outside of the boot. You look at some of the goals that they've scored where, because of the level, you're able to do that. You can naturally think that, a bit like Southampton, and the Ipswich and Southampton have been kind of lumped together unfairly in a way. They've taken that approach into the Premier League, whereas it's far more versatile, it's far more resilient, it's far more pragmatic. And I think that, yeah, people probably haven't seen that in the same way, and injuries will obviously play a part into that, because otherwise we could be sat here with a different kind of topic of conversation. But when it comes to style of play, I think that A, it hasn't really been an issue, and B, a lot of the points that get leveled against Ipswich actually aren't that true when you look at the numbers. And of course the eye test has to come into that, but as far as, I don't know what you guys think, but when I look at it, I don't think of Ipswich as this team that overplayed too much, and that's been their downfall.
It is. Oh, Stu, you're mute.
Apologies. Yeah, no, it's not like Southampton, certainly in the early stages of the season, where every week you've seen this sort of horror highlight of, you know, trying to play out of their own box and it leading to mistake. You can count on one hand probably the amount of times that has led to a goal for Ipswich this season. Course, there's been plenty of areas that they've fallen short in, but I don't think playing style is the one. They could have come into this league and tried to, from day one, park the bus, be really horrible, pragmatic, direct, all these things that the pundits are alluding to, and the reality is they'd have still probably fallen short. But the way they've tried to approach it this year, with a bit of bravery at times, they have tried to give it a go. And those are, it's easy to forget now, but in that first half of the season, when availability was higher, they really took games to the likes of Villa and Man United and Liverpool on the opening day. They really went toe-to-toe with some teams. And I saw a stat the other day. Kieran McKenna said, look, I know where we are in the half-time table. And look, I don't expect everyone to be giving us massive applause for being good at half-time in games, because I'm not naive enough to think that's how it works. But I know where we are in the table, and that says a lot about, you know, what we've been able to do for chunks of games. You can actually extend that to where they are in the 75th minute of games table, which is a silly stat really. But if games finished after 75 minutes, Ipswich would be outside of the bottom four. Man United would be in the bottom three. So that shows you this whole kind of so close yet so far narrative to this season. And that it's that last little bit. We know that all the stats about points drop from winning positions, but you do have to take the positive from the fact that they have been able to compete. They have been able to get ahead. They have been able to get themselves in good positions. That, to me, says that the ultimate shortfall has been the squad depth, has been the bench quality, has been, and injuries does play into that. And even with a fully fit squad, it might not have been enough. But that, to me, is like, you know, Bournemouth was a prime example. You get to the 80th minute and they can bring on whatever it was, £60 million worth of attacking talent and turn the side, and Ipswich just weren't able to stay with that. And that's Bournemouth, who've built that squad over years and years, and that's true of so many others. So style of play, to me, is always a bit of an easy one to throw out there as the reason it's probably not even anywhere near the sort of top five reasons for why Ipswich have fallen short.
These comparisons as well are quite interesting. Well, one of the bits that Merson said was like, don't look at Brentford, don't look at Brighton, don't look at Forest, focus on finishing 17th and then build from there. And we've sat here and spoken a lot about, well, look at what Forest have done in their journey, look at what Brighton and Brentford have done. And that, in my eyes, that's the right thing, because it's not like these teams have come on and suddenly just been like, well, we're in the Europa League now, we're in the Champions League, because Forest came up and I got here. Forest finished 16th and 17th in their first two seasons. Brighton, between 15th and 17th, bounced between the two in their first four seasons. Brentford came up 13th, 9th, 16th. So there are kind of models to follow in that. And also at the same time, because we've watched these teams now, what, a couple of times each almost. And I mean, take Forest, for example, and they're a good example. And I think people think because they're towards the top of the table that naturally they're quite an expansive attacking team. They're not. They're horrible. They're a horrible team. They are direct. They have, I think this might be the lowest average possession in the league. They lump it. They are counter-attacking. I think that it's so easy to kind of have these interpretations of certain football teams and also the journeys that they've gone through to get to this point. And you can sometimes look at a Forest and forget that they've almost been relegated twice. And you can forget that Brighton have almost been relegated quite a few times before they then had a brilliant season and got into Europe. And there's always a period of development, and it was going to be so hard for Ipswich to have that period of development and change into what a Premier League team could look like stylistically, if you do talk about style, because they've gone and changed half the team. And Kieran McKenna in that situation, and I don't think he would anyway, but he's not suddenly going to go, right, we're changing half the team, so we're also going to change the incredibly successful style of play that has got us two successive promotions and is the reason why we're here today. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Just before we move on from this style chat, to say that Kieran McKenna has almost been kind of too stubborn, and he always picks the, you know, I've heard people talk about doing the same thing over and over is the, and expecting different results is definition of insanity, and he's stuck in his ways and he's needed to mix it up and be more flexible. If you look at the journey to this point, it's easy to look back with rose-tinted glasses now and be like, Ipswich blew everyone away with this entertaining, expansive brand of football all the way through the leagues. They did at times, but it wasn't always that way. I remember us sitting down after that Bristol Rovers Valentine's Day game in League One saying, are they too predictable? Do they need to mix it up? And they did. They did change things. They did go slightly more direct for a little period. It's nuanced. It's not suddenly hoof it up to the big man, but they did start to change it up a little bit. And the underlying principles of how Kieran McKenna wants to play will always be there. But he has done little tweaks, not always in terms of some drastic formation switch or anything like that. But the way they've tackled things, even in the Championship season, we had periods where we went, they're winning 4-3, 3-2. Are they too open? It's great to watch. But they did grind out a lot of 1-0s that season as well. Blackburn away. There's a few, if you look back on that season, where they did, you know, they can dig in, they can be organised, they can defend as well. So, yeah, I think it's wrong to kind of say that Kieran McKenna has not been tactically adaptable, not just this season, but along the way.
I also wonder if this conversation, this viewpoint may be coloured by age, because it tends to be the older pundits that have this kind of point of view about the way you should play football. And, you know, Merson certainly falls into that. And looking at our engagement on social media, for example, there's definitely a school of thought, particularly on our Facebook page, that agrees with that sentiment. Now, obviously, Facebook tends to be now used by older people. My dad, who's 78 years old, spends most of his days out on Facebook like a teenager on his phone. And I just wonder if these kind of older school of players/pundits who probably don't think sports science is needed, think sports nutrition is nonsense, are kind of set in their ways and aren't open-minded to new ways of doing things.
Get really angry by the phrase low block. Why did they call it? When did that creep in? We used to just call it defending or sitting deep.
Yeah. So I do wonder.
I'll be honest, I've been guilty at times of kind of pushing back against sort of, jokingly we've kind of said about that. But things move on, don't they? Things progress. Yeah. Not always for the better, but in most parts, and that you've got to move with the times, haven't you?
I don't want to live in a world where the only way you can survive in the Premier League is just by lumping it anyway. Surely we can do better than that, can't we? Anyway, moving on, Stu, the other thing I think that caught my eye was you chatting to Kieran yesterday about the future of Jens Kajusta, who we all know is an absolute Rolls-Royce of a football player. We hope, against hope, might come back next season. He's not going to be here. But you chatted to Kieran about that yesterday as well.
Yeah, that's a question from Phil Ham from TWTD, who's used the hook of Player of the Year vote is open now. Jens is obviously someone who's going to be in that conversation. Any chance at all that he could be here next season, Kieran? Suitably diplomatic answer. I don't like talking about he's not our player, he's Napoli's player. But let's it's pretty obvious that we like him very much as a player, and he's been one of our better players this season, was the response. But conversations will happen further down the line. But as I've said before, I don't think there's any chance of keeping Jens Kajusta as a second-tier football club next season.
No, sad times. You spoke to one of the guys who will hopefully be starting without Kajusta being here next season as well, Jack Taylor, yesterday, AJ. What are the main takeaways from chatting to Jack?
That's a big one, actually, starting next season. And it's quite interesting where sometimes you can talk to players who are in that the team, and the feeling is they always, or almost always, come in feeling really positive. But if you say, you're not frustrated about the fact you're not playing, they'll usually say, well, yeah, I want to be in the team. I want to be in the team this weekend, and I want to get into the manager's thoughts. I know there's competition, but that's what I want to do. And it is really frustrating. There is that with Jack Taylor, but he raises quite an interesting point when he gets asked, have you played as much as you kind of hoped you would? And he said, yeah, because I wasn't getting in squads at the start of the season, which is something that I think we forget with him. There's kind of a lot of talks with minutes and what the future will hold. And you talk to quite a lot of players, and also with Kieran McKenna as well, you've got to kind of, they're all focused on, and Taylor is as well, all focused on these next four games. But I think it was good that Taylor was able to kind of discuss what the championship's going to be like next year, where the dynamic's going to be totally different. Of course, they're coming in as one of the big dogs, basically, and being able to say, it's going to be different to when we came up from League One, but we're still going to treat every game in the Championship next year as it was a Premier League game. We're going to treat every team with the same respect as we would a team in the Premier League this year, which was really good. But yeah, spoke really well about competition, about playing at Old Trafford as well as a Man United fan. Boring. Don't laugh. Those kind of things. So yeah, it's one of those where you don't want to go over the same stuff and talk about his journey, but it is a pretty remarkable journey when you look back at it, having played in the National League and all the way up, scored at every level. And he's hungry to get back up and feels pretty confident that Town can be in that mix again next season to be back in the Premier League.
You talking about big dogs and Ipswich being one of the big dogs next season. I don't know how that makes me feel, because
makes me worried.
When's the last time Ipswich have been big dogs? Probably the first season down in League One. There was a sense that they,
Ipswich.
Exactly, yeah. 100 goals, 100 points.
Yeah.
Da-da-da. That soon ran out of steam, didn't it? With remember Jerry Barton calling out the kind of hand-holding celebrations at Fleetwood quite early on. And
don't mention Jerry Barton.
But beyond that, when's the last time Ipswich would ever been sort of seen as favourites? Even in the League One promotion season, by that point, they were four seasons in and they didn't start the season as runaway favourites, did they? It was only sort of January and stuff when momentum picked up. So, yeah, certainly in my time covering the club, this will be the first time I think Ipswich really would have been seen as big, big favourites by that first League One season.
It is weird, isn't it? Where, I mean, especially when there'll be plenty of time to digest this, but when that odds list comes out, I'd say there's a very good chance that Ipswich are going to be top of it to win the title. And they're coming down with a team that's currently on the record low points total, a team that is financially not in a good place. If Sheffield United are promoted through the playoffs along with Leeds and Burnley, you're losing three very heavy hitters. Of course, teams like Birmingham come into that mix, and you'll always still have your Sunderlands and your Middlesbroughs. But with the condition that Ipswich are in with their squad, and there's no guarantee what that squad will look like come the start of the season, then, yeah, then all of a sudden the picture's painted for them on paper, famous last words, being the strongest in the league. And that in itself is a very weird thought, and probably not one that the club has had since League One, even then.
Hmm. Well, it's a total reversal of mentality, isn't it? They've kind of done this underdog thing. The shark mentality that Ashton goes on about. And then to suddenly be the favourite, you know, the big fish, as it were, is a complete switch in mentality. And that is exactly the sort of thing that would worry me back in the day. But now with, you know, Kieran McKenna at the helm and the sort of players they have, maybe it shouldn't. We're going to find out, aren't we? Okay, right. Before we move on to Everton, AJ, let's start a new regular feature of this show, which I'm calling Rumour Roundup, which, friends, excitingly, we're getting to the point now where we get all these transfer rumours. I love it. I love it. Give me more is what I say. I can't wait for this summer. And obviously, predictably, we've already had quite a few. Do you want to bring us up to speed with the ones we've had, AJ?
No, not really. Please, every time we do this, can you do that whisper? It's been like, you know, we do Stardust Spirits now, and I do this. Every time we do Rumour Roundup from now on, I want you to whisper.
I'll knock up a jingle for it.
Oh, yeah. Love it. Yeah, so in terms of incoming rumours, there's been nothing because Ipswich have just been relegated from the Premier League. Unsurprisingly, outgoing rumours, there's loads. Liam Delap has been linked with every club ever, just every one of them. Obviously, it's been well documented by a lot of sources that he has a £30 million relegation release clause. I know that on a previous pod, you guys have gone through and spoken about that. I don't think there's probably that much need to talk about Liam Delap in that, because we'll just have to wait and see which one of the 80,000 clubs goes and triggers that or whatever. The interesting ones is kind of replacement, quote unquote. A lot of people think will be George Hurst, because he did really well in the Championship last year, apart from injuries, done well in the Premier League, apart from injuries again as well. When he joined, he signed a four-year contract. He's now 2 years into that, so has 2 years left. Town, according to Football Insider, trying to get him tied up to a new deal to ensure that he stays at the club amid interest from Burnley and Leeds. Burnley and Leeds both been promoted. Again, you can kind of see the appeal in that. I have no idea what George Hurst would be worth in terms of a transfer fee, but with his experience, it's a big tick, and with his injury record, it's a big concern. So yeah, not the last time we'll be talking about Burnley and Leeds, because Leeds as well have been linked with Amari Hutchinson. That one initially came from Court Offside. It was a little kind of airy-fairy, but they've kind of come out and said that there is interest from Daniel Farke's side. And then since then, we've had Football Insider, who've said that there's a £35 million relegation release clause. With Amari, I think, someone correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was 20 million plus add-ons initially, was it? Yeah, I'm getting nods.
I think million, it was so. 18, wasn't it? They said originally, but I think it is those kind
somewhere
of
in that figure. Yeah, yeah. So it would ensure that Town would get in the region of £15 million profit. Again, would anyone trigger a £35 million release clause after his season? He's done well, but well enough for that. 2 goals, 3 assists, I think it is. I'm not too sure. And then the other one that's quite interesting is Ben Johnson. Report from Sky has said that Fulham are in the market for a new right-sided defender. One of the options they're looking at is Kyle Walker-Peters, who's available on a free from Southampton, but also Ben Johnson, who is someone that Ipswich want to keep, would take quite a significant fee to tempt him away. But if Fulham were to look at that, they are interested in Ben Johnson, according to Sky Sports. He's one of the names on the list, so there you go. No real rumours coming in. And then in terms of the exits, Delap to every club ever, Hurst with Burnley and Leeds, Hutchinson with his £35 million relegation release clause to Leeds as well, as another one that's been spoken about, and then Ben Johnson to Fulham. Many more to come. Many, many more to come.
Oh, I can't wait.
Are we just going to get in this scenario now where the three clubs who come up just plunder the best players from the three clubs that go down, and they just end up swapping players back and forth.
The Dara O'Shea cycle, basically.
It's bouncing between the promoted clubs. Yeah. I'm going to ask you this every week now, boy. Well, maybe not every week, but certainly throughout the summer. Liam Delap, if you had to put your money on it now, where's he going to end up?
Ooh, okay. Stu. Ooh.
Ever since, I keep saying, ever since Alex first mentioned it to me in the car many months ago, I can't get Newcastle out of my mind. And it's not the most obvious destination, because I would imagine some dominoes need to fall. I think, A, they need to get in the Champions League, and probably Isak has to go. And I know there's a lot of talk about Delap's had a taste of playing football regularly and he's going to want to go somewhere where he's going to play regularly. Certainly if Isak stays, they wouldn't be able to guarantee that. But if they're in the Champions League next season, and they can say to him, you know, with European games, cup games, a little bit of league rotation at times, minutes off the bench, you're still going to get a good, healthy amount of minutes. And there's a chance that we might, you know, Isak, we might get another year out of him, but there's every chance we'll have to cash in at some point. And there's a succession plan for you there. Would that appeal to him? He just feels like a Newcastle, in quotes, number nine, you know, just they love a big physical front man up there, don't they? So I don't know. It's probably not the most obvious destination as we sit here at the moment, but I just haven't been able to shake that. If I had to put a pound on it, Chelsea is probably the safest bet, I would say, at the moment. Their interest seems to have been there the longest, with the Maresca link as well, his former Man City youth manager.
So you're saying Chelsea, I think, after that, at the moment.
No, look, if this is a pound and it's a gamble, I'll stick it on Newcastle.
Oh, okay.
I'll get some higher odds there, I think. So I'll go with that.
So Friday, May the 2nd, Stuart Watson saying Liam Delap ends up at Newcastle. Are you agreeing with that, AJ? That was your hypothesis to begin with.
It was, with the thinking that Isak will go. I now don't think Isak will go if they are in the Champions League. So no, basically. Teams I'd look at, Villa are one that's kind of in the back of my head, but again, would that require with Watkins having been linked with Arsenal, there were bids for him in January, maybe there'll be something there. Again, thoughts of Europe, maybe. I like, he feels very Borussia Dortmund, something like that. But if you're asking me right now, at 11:04 on the 2nd of May 2025, I think he's going to be a Manchester United player. I think that they will win the Europa League. I think it's, I've said for many, many months now, it's going to be a Manchester United Tottenham final. And by the law of football, Tottenham are not allowed to win trophies. So I think Man United will be back in the Champions League next season. I think that will be the big swing. And then from there, it's just, we're Manchester United. We are historically one of the biggest clubs. We've got a manager that's trying to get us back to where we belong. And here's 200 grand a week to get started. So Manchester United is the one I think he'll end up at.
Oof. Okay, note that down. Friday, May the 2nd, AJ Man United, Stewie Chelsea. Weird the way Man United are so good in Europe, isn't it? I think they're still the only English side that are unbeaten in Europe this season, yet so bad in the league. The other thing I want to ask you about, Stewie, is who's got
I was just going to say, with Europe in general, is what you find is that I'm not saying that English clubs are the best in Europe, but the English league, like if you compare, I think Ipswich would stand a chance against some of these teams that have been in the Conference League and in like a mid-table La Liga side. The gap between like mid-table teams in Spain and the fact that you've got a team that's 14th and a team that's 16th in the Premier League that's going to meet in the Europa League final quite comfortably. One of them has just gone and beaten the team that's conceded like 12 goals at home, just gone there and won 3-0. It's the United, they've been terrible. There is such a big gap between the Premier League in terms of quality top to bottom. I'm not saying again that they've got the best teams in the world, because I think Barcelona and PSG have shown that, but like as a league quality, big gap.
Villa's an interesting shout on Delap. I hadn't really considered that with the Watkins comments the other day about not being happy about, you know, banging the manager's door down about not starting. And is that sort of indicating that he might look to move? There was obviously big talk about Arsenal, wasn't there, in January, that came and went. I always think if you play well against a team, that always elevates you a little bit. And Delap scored that brilliant goal against Villa at Portman Road. He scored the equaliser at Villa Park, didn't he, in the reverse fixture. To be fair, the same's true against Man United. He's had a, certainly a good home game against United, didn't he? So, yeah, Villa, I think he'll put a lot of stock, and I think his dad will be telling him this, pick your manager as well as your club and someone who can develop you. And Kieran McKenna's taken you to new heights as a kind of young, thoughtful, good man manager slash coach. And Unai Emery is right up there in terms of the world's best, I would say, at the moment. So that could appeal.
Let me ask you, Stu. AJ's written about this week around Amari Hutchinson and whether he might depart in the summer. If that 35 million relegation release clause is indeed a thing, or even if it's not, do you think what odds would you put on Amari Hutchinson departing? Has he done enough, is what I'm asking you, to earn a big money move this summer? He still clearly has, you know, a world of potential, very exciting young player, but he's not set it alight like Liam Delap has.
For me, I don't think he's done enough to warrant a £35 million move, but maybe that's me being naive to the market and what a young English player with a high ceiling gets these days. Maybe it's tainted a little bit because he's had a few injuries in the second half of the season and he's faded from our minds a bit, but he's played, you know, he's started a lot of football matches, probably more than Ipswich anticipated this season. He's had some really big moments, hasn't he? He's had the goal against Man United, goal against Chelsea, clearly very highly thought of. See what he does at the England under 21 Euros in the summer. 35 feels like a big fee for someone who's only really had two senior seasons in English football. But I guess that's kind of just a standard fee these days, isn't it? You kind of forget that, don't you, that 20s and 30s get sort of chucked around willy-nilly. So yeah, gut feeling is no, but you never know.
I think that's your gut feeling as well, isn't it, AJ, in terms of Amari departing?
Yeah, that would be the gut feeling, and it would have been regardless of the relegation release clause. It's hard, as you said, with kind of trying to place a value on where these players are, and we had this discussion last year, how much would it take to sign Amari Hutchinson? Wow, 20 million, that feels like a lot. And then you're kind of suddenly after one season being able to say, right, add another 15 onto that. Then, I don't know, I mean, compare it to James McAtee, who I think is valued probably in the same levels. Obviously, he's still at a top team. Not maybe playing as regularly. Plenty of interest in him, I think, because he's coming slightly more towards the end of his contract, a little bit older as well. The fact he's still only 21 and he's had the pathway that he's had will make him a really interesting player. And I'm sure that, you know, a lot of teams would like to have him, but at that kind of fee, knowing what Ipswich paid and knowing the profit that they need to get on him to make it a realistic option, personally, I can't see it. And also for him as well, someone who has thrived under Kieran McKenna, I think returned to Ipswich more than anything because of Kieran McKenna, considering that he had Champions League offers on the table and seemingly Ajax and Feyenoord and teams like that. And the fact that I just think he will be so much better off for another season in the Championship. Like, imagine a player of that kind of quality. We know what he can do on the ball. Add in what he's learnt off the ball from the Premier League, I think he could be really excellent in the Championship next year. So, no, is my answer.
Okay. Right then, so that's Liam Delap and Amari Hutchinson covered. Let's move on to Everton. Stewie, you're not long away from departing for Liverpool. You'll be in the Cavern Club tonight, no doubt. Singing Beatles classics. Overrated, the Beatles. But how you feel? I mean, it feels kind of fitting, mate, if I'm honest. We've had this narrative ever since you've started covering Ipswich Town. We've kind of joked about playing Everton in the FA Cup, and now it's finally going to happen, and it's happening at a really kind of poignant time for Everton as well, being you know, penultimate game at Goodison Park. How are you feeling about this game? Because regardless of what's going on in terms of Town being relegated and nothing really to play for, this is still a game to look forward to, a game to relish, as Kieran McKenna is so fond of saying.
Yeah, I think so. First point from an Ipswich point of view, from the players' point of view, Kieran McKenna keeps reminding everyone this is 22 years away from the Premier League. Games like this that we've dreamed of for so long, shouldn't wish it away too readily. The players, you know, hopefully there's a feeling that they'll be back sooner rather than later, but you never know when games of this sort of magnitude, just played the likes of Arsenal, Newcastle, Chelsea, now Everton in the penultimate game at Goodison Park, are not ones to just be kind of wished away. So, yeah, from a personal point of view, don't want to sort of linger too much on that. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it will be, you know, speaking, I think, as general football fans, it will be a kind of sad day to say goodbye to Goodison Park, one of the grand old stadiums of English football. I looked it up. No stadium has hosted more top-flight games than Goodison Park. I think it had a World Cup semi in 66, steeped with history, and feels like it's one of those old traditional grounds, doesn't it, that's a little bit tired around the edges and has been for a while. A lot of restricted views with the steel supports and things like that, but that's what adds to the charm, isn't it? It's surrounded by sort of terraced streets and things like that, and as slowly, one by one, all these sort of traditional old grounds go, it feels like a loss to English football. But, you know, we've talked about it, time moves on, time stands still for no one, and I think Everton have had to do what they've needed to do to kind of try and keep pace with the modern game. I think they've, the Bramley Moore Docks Stadium, from everything I've seen from afar, it looks like they've done it well in terms of location and steep banked seats and tight to the pitch and all that sort of thing. But, you know, a lot of clubs have struggled post stadiums. West Ham, you know, are one that haven't got it right, and I'm not trying to compare the London Stadium to what Everton have done, and there are others as well. It takes a little bit of time to make a new home, so I think it will be a poignant day for Everton fans. They got Ipswich and then Southampton to finish at home, no doubt about it. They'll want to be finishing on a bang under David Moyes at Goodison.
For the record, I don't really think the Beatles were overrated. Don't come for me. AJ, so tomorrow she'll be sat there sobbing gently all game next to you. Who do you think is actually going to play for Ipswich Town, given we've already said that pretty much half the team is out injured? What kind of starting 11 are you expecting to see, and particularly who's going to play on the right?
I just want to say as well, one of my favourite parts of yesterday's press conference was Marcus, the press officer, introducing Stu ahead of his questions. I think it's something like Mr. Everton. And Kieran McKenna said, "Oh, I didn't realise you were an Everton fan." And then joked, "Mr. Everton, I won't be giving you any more injury news, just in case you're texting David Moyes on the
Our
choir.
Resident Toffee was how I was
oh,
introduced.
Was that it? Oh, nice. Okay. Sorry, nice. Sorry. Yeah, there you go. So I quite like that one. Ipswich team. Try and like take names out of a hat in terms of who's fit, maybe. I really don't know. And it's such a lottery, isn't it, in terms of trying to figure out who could potentially come back in. Is Axel going to be fit? Townsend? There are late calls. And that was the thing that Kieran McKenna stressed yesterday is, look, hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll be in a better position, but it's going to be a lot of late calls going into this one. As a kind of a core team, I don't think you can really look at changing too much, to be perfectly honest. I think actually they played really well against Newcastle as well. So when you look at the back line, assuming that you don't have any, let's just work on the assumption we don't have anyone who's going to be rushed back in and is fit to play, I'd keep the core of it the same. I'd keep the back line the same. I think the midfield too works quite well. Jack Clark on the left and Ciso behind the lap. And then the question mark is obviously replacing Ben Johnson on the right. Ooh, wow, this looks important. Wow. And it's really, really difficult. And I had this discussion with Stu on the boot room yesterday, trying to piece it together. And it depends how you want to play it. You could switch and Ciso up to the right, bring Connor Chaplin in, but then your defensive systems are a little bit all over the place. You can rejig things that look quite attacking. Alternatively, and McKenna's kind of referenced, look, we want to go win games, and if that involves us being defensive and having to grind things out, just because we're relegated doesn't mean that we're not going to do it. Ben Godfrey up against his former team, he was the one who came on at Newcastle after the red card. It would mean potentially starting with five natural centre-backs in a back five. But if that's the way it has to be, if it has to be making it an ugly game, then so be it. I'm not the kind of person, if I was managing, I don't think I would do that. I'd be just be like, yeah, you know what? Screw it. Why not? Just go Chaplin and Ciso and Clark as the three. From McKenna's perspective, I could see it possibly being that five with Ben Godfrey there, and that'll be a big game for him up against his former team where he spent 4 years.
Hmm. Stu, you've unmuted yourself and you've brought out your little blue book.
I just suddenly realised we're talking about teams and where there's so many players that are in and out. I just had a little list that reminds myself of who's actually available. I would say the kind of effort, there's nothing to lose, let's go for it option for me would be, is this the time to do the Liam Delap on the right hand side option with Hurst up front? I don't know Chaplin's fitness status, but the fact that he's not started a game since pre-Christmas, I know he's got to get back in at some point, and you're trying to get him maybe up to speed now as an extended pre-season for next year. Might be a bit early for him to come in and start a game of football. So that, if you wanted to sort of go with an extra attacker, a right-sider, Delap, I think, would be the best option of those. In Ciso, defensively, not for me in that sort of proper wing-backy type role. The reality is, and I think I would do this, is it has to be Ben Godfrey. And it's not ideal because it's not a January move that's worked out for whatever reason. Came in having not played a lot of football for Atalanta, thrown in at the deep end against, you know, Man City and then Tottenham, where he got hooked at half time. I don't think he'd be in the squad if it wasn't for these unavailabilities at the moment. But he was the one who came on last weekend after the red card. He did play that sort of right wing back role. He's an ex-Everton player as well, which adds to a bit of juicy narrative. So I think this is, for all the talk about being too open and this, that and the other, it will go absolutely against what Kieran McKenna wants to do, but it will be needs must. It will be five centre-backs on the pitch, potentially. I'm hoping Townsend can play at left-back, but if not, five centre-backs on the pitch, and I think it will be just try and grind something out against a team that are pretty grindy themselves, Everton, aren't they? This screams low-scoring game, I think.
Which brings on to predictions, Stu, which, of course, there's no real reason other than fun to do. So you're going to be sat your boyhood mecca, as it were, tomorrow for the first time covering a game. What do you think is going to happen? Are we going to see the toffees chewed up and spit out by Ipswich Town?
These last four games represent an opportunity to finish the season on a pretty positive note. I keep saying it, I've been saying it for ages, get to May in touch and they've got a chance. Yeah. And it's a real shame that it's been confirmed ahead of these matches, because Everton away, I know they've been better under Moyes. I think they were 1 point clear of relegation when Dyche went in January. They're now 17 points clear. I think they've only lost four games under Moyes, but the home record's not been amazing. They have just dipped off a little bit. They come into this one off the back of two straight defeats, albeit to Man City and Chelsea. The goals have started to dry up for them a little bit. So, and Ipswich, as we know, three of the four wins have come away from home. So there's no reason they can't go to Everton and spoil the party, as Kieran McKenna says. But I'll cut to the chase. I've got it down as a 1-0 for Everton. I think it might even just be like a set-piece goal that decides it. I just think Ipswich is unavailability. If they went there with fully fit and firing and we're in a good place to attack this game, I would back Ipswich. But yeah, given everything we've discussed about injuries, I think it might be a bit difficult.
AJ, so 1-0 Everton, Stewie's saying. What do you reckon for this one?
I reckon this will be an absolute abomination of a football match. Like, I think this will be like the worst football game ever. So just to hype it up for you guys. Yeah. Hearing all of this, I feel like kind of going towards a 0-0. I've predicted a 0-0 all season. And then I've looked at Everton's last eight, and that's since the that'd be game week 27, I think that would have been. So if you can think back about as far as when Town went to Manchester United, around that time. So since then, Everton scoreline's been 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 1-0 defeat, 1-1, 1-0 win, 2-0 defeat, 1-0 defeat. So, it's low margin. But there is always a goal. And I am going to go with two goals, weirdly. And I think they're going to be two terrible goals. And I think it's going to be a 1-1 draw. I'm going to say Town spoil a bit of a Goodison Park party and get something there. Why not? 1-1 draw. Just an awful, awful draw.
Okay, looking forward to it. Can't wait.
cool.
Excellent. Make sure you don't miss it. Stu,
we'll be there to cover it all.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't be there. Make sure you don't miss it with us. Because it's going to be great. Don't sign up for Sky anytime soon, AJ, with your promos. What is the worst game of football of the season? Yeah, it's going to be awful. Tune in. Give us £75 a month. Stu, we know when you had the opportunity with Big Dunk when he was manager. Was that Forest Green?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were going to hope, you're going to ask for a picture with him, being as he was your boyhood hero. David Moyes is also in that ilk, you know, the Everton boss when they were doing well and you were supporting them as a kid. Is there any chance you think you might break protocol and go for a pick with Moyesy tomorrow?
Well, the first thing on the Big Dunk one was, yeah, shows you the professional I am. I went down there, my boyhood idol, yeah, as a footballer. I stood there. I don't normally, that was in the League One time, where the opposition manager would often just kind of do things in a huddle on the touchline, yeah, whereas Kieran will come up and do a kind of more formal press conference up in the press room. But I thought, I can't miss the opportunity to go down and see Big Dunk. So I went down there. I was patiently listening in while he had his questions, gearing myself up to maybe ask him one or two and maybe even just tell him, you know,
I love
thanks
you
for the memories. Yeah, yeah. I love you. Yeah. I don't know how that would land with Big Dunk, to be honest. But yeah, then out the corner of my eye, I saw Kieran finish up what he was doing on the touchline and start heading up and put work first. I broke away from Big Dunk. I missed my big opportunity to go and bag up the quotes for you, the listener. So well done, me. Yeah. David Moyes. He's the only person in the world of football I've ever had a picture taken with.
Oh, you've already got a picture?
I have got a picture, yes. There was a period where we used to enter a works team into a five-a-side tournament at St George's Park,
right,
every year. Yeah. And they assign kind of all the out-of-work managers at the time, the LMA, kind of send them along and you have a breakfast there at St George's Park and they pick your managers out of the hat and assign you a manager. David Moyes, I can't remember which jobs he was in between at the time. I'm really hoping we got him. Didn't. We had Gary Rowett in the end, who was great. He was good fun, but he wasn't David Moyes. But I did manage to stop David for a picture. I did get a little bit fanboy that day.
Where is that picture? Is it on display in Watson Acres?
No.
Do you even know where it is? Is it just on your phone somewhere?
Yeah, on my phone somewhere.
Okay, fair enough. All right, then. AJ, have you ever had a picture taken with a football hero?
I've had loads of Cambridge ones, but I mean, I can't really call them football heroes. Most of them are playing in the National League now. My favourite one that I ever did was when I was a Cambridge season ticket holder and I spotted Louis John, who was like a rotation player at the time, and I was about like 16. I was like, wow, this is brilliant. And he was filling up his car at Sainsbury's. I said, can I get a photo? And I don't think anyone had ever asked him that in his life. I think he might be at Sutton now. So yeah, I have that photo somewhere. I have one with Gareth Southgate, Elland Road. I went to Elland Road when I was at uni just for fun. And Gareth Southgate was there. I said to him, best of luck for the Euros this summer. He said, thank you. The Euros were then cancelled due to COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was great. Other than that, not too many others that come to mind. But yeah, the odd one or two I've got there.
I'm so old that pictures weren't a thing into well, they were a thing when I was younger. You could, pictures had been invented.
Not that old.
Yeah, I'm not that old.
They got pictures that like Victorian big box flash thing. Yeah,
you go under the little tape thing and just wait there for 10 minutes.
When I was a kid supporting football, we used to have drawings with players. Yeah,
we used to just bring our rattle and our milk crate.
Yeah, but my first ever football autograph, and I'm getting to it because it links to AJ, Dion Dublin. When he was at Cambridge,
what a man. The stairs led up to the bedrooms.
Exactly. Yeah, and he invented the doob. Friends, before we finish today, and we've done coming up to a perfect length of show, an hour. Just a couple of other things to mention, which involve Portman Road. Big news this morning, which I know AJ, as a young person, you must be very excited about. Ed Sheeran is going to play Portman Road for the first time, July 11th to 13th. The worst kept secret in the world. It's been coming for ages. But yeah, all announced, actually took out a wrap on our paper, which is quite nice. Ed, with his bunts, thought, I need some publicity. I'll get onto the angle and I'll do a wrap. Are you an Ed Sheeran fan, AJ? Bear in mind, we are going to try and get him on this podcast. So if you'd not say yes.
Oh my God, I adore Ed Sheeran.
Yes.
Honestly, so much. And, when you talk about photos, I've had those moments where I think I might have said this before, he's kind of come past the mix zones a lot because when he's been to games, especially like the away games, he goes into the away dressing room, cries with them or they've lost probably and celebrates with them if they've won. And then he'll walk past, but he's obviously flanked by like 14 very large security guards. So I can't go, oh, Ed, you want to come for a pitch, something like that. He's just come over and said hi a few times, which has been quite nice. But yes, colossal Ed Sheeran fan, of course. I also quite like some of the support acts, and Busted for me was the one that stood out. He's got Busted on night two. That's my kind of thing. I know that Sophie, my girlfriend's very excited by Maisie Peters on the third night there, so I'm probably going to be asked to somehow try and get some tickets to this. But yeah, looks good. Excited.
If you're listening, Ed, and I'm sure you are, I was an early adopter of Sheeran. I first saw Sheeran in 2012 at Thetford Forest when he was on the verge of becoming a big thing, and subsequently went to see him at the O2 and Wembley. So I'm a long-term fan of Sheeran. I also remember when we did the first story of him signing his record deal, and he was sat in a cafe in Framlingham with a colleague of mine called John Barnes, who had followed him through his kind of early career. And thinking, you know, the chances of this guy ever doing anything were clearly in the pop music world quite slim. And now to think that he's one of the biggest pop stars on the planet, has sponsored the club, now owns part of the club, and now he's coming back to Portman Road to do a gig. It's pretty good, isn't it? It's quite a nice feel-good story. Stewie, is Aya an Ed Sheeran fan?
Yes, more of a Taylor Swift fan. She's
okay. There's
big
the link.
Swiftie.
There's the link.
But she's very aware that Ed is one of our own, and I think she likes a bit of Ed as well. So I'm sure I'll be under a bit of pressure to find us some tickets somehow. Favorite Busted song, if you're asking, what I go to school for. What other ones is there?
Year 3000.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I also spent quite a lot of time as a young journalist speaking to Charlie Simpson because they were a thing when I was like a news reporter. So I used to speak to Charlie quite a lot. Very nice guy. Very posh. Woodbridge. Anyway, there we go. And the other bit of news, of course, Portman Road-wise, Fabio Wardley, bit of a blow this. Jarrell Miller, the big shithouse, has pulled out with an injury. He's hurt his shoulder. So he did all that talking, slapping Fabio at the press conference. Now he's pulled out because he's hurt his shoulder. He can't fight. So we are awaiting a new opponent being announced. I believe, from what I'm led to believe, it's going to be Filip Hrgović, who is a Croatian Olympic bronze medalist, formerly one of the next big things in boxing. Like Jarrell Miller, has only ever lost to Daniel Dubois. Would be a similar sort of fight in that Hrgović is quite a pressure fighter as well. And again, would certainly fit the bill in terms of Fabio proving that he's at world level. Expecting that to be announced in the next day or so, next 48 hours, I think they said on Thursday. There's a couple of other names in the frame, but I think it's going to be Hrgović. So we'll see if I'm right or not. Anything else can to mention,
you,
friends?
Can you tell Jerome Miller his new nickname to his face, please?
What's that? Shithouse.
Yeah. He's formally changed from the Big Baby to...
Yeah, I'll shout it at him from across the ocean. House. Yeah.
Wonder what happened to that Norwich shirt with the...
Going down.
Whatever he had, written going on the down. Back.
Yeah. Anyway. But, you know, I'm meant to believe that a lot of tickets have already been sold for the Fabio fight. And if it is Hrgović, in many ways, that's actually a better opponent for him in terms of proving himself at that world level. So keep an eye out for that, hopefully being announced today or tomorrow, whether or not they'll announce it the same day as the Ed Sheeran announcement, I don't know. Friends, anything else to mention? Any other business? I have some business, actually. I keep forgetting to ask this. Our sponsor, stardustspirits.co.uk, use the code KOA. Gary Bowman, who runs that, has asked me, and I keep forgetting to put this to you, He texted me a mailbag question. Now, obviously, we don't do mailbag that often, but I thought we might as well get it in now just because he's our sponsor. So, therefore, he's paid to ask this question. He wants to know, who's the best English manager to have never managed England? Now, for me, there's an obvious answer, and I think it's the right answer, given my stated affiliations to a particular manager from the past. Stu, is there anyone that springs to mind? I suppose more recently, people might say someone like Harry Redknapp. Is there anyone that springs to mind for you?
I'll let you take Cluffy because that's probably
the correct
yeah. one, probably. Probably looking at my kind of era of fandom, it felt like I would have loved, never know, it might have gone horribly wrong, but it felt like there was a time where Harry Redknapp, I think, in an era where it was kind of dressing room splits and, you know, club cliques and the golden generation not quite happening and stuff. I think there was a period where we probably just needed a good old fashioned man manager that just made it fun to go away on international duty and didn't overcomplicate things too much. And we'll never know how that would have kind of worked out during that period of Harry Redknapp. I'll go with him.
Yeah. Any others to throw into the frame, AJ?
I mean, historically, I'll have to dig up. Probably Pazzi would be the one I'd say would be the most likely. I mean, given what he achieved with Liverpool, again, it's way, way, way before my time. But in terms of like club level success over a period, would that have translated internationally? Don't know. But that would probably be the one that would stand out for me.
The obvious answer, and of course, the correct answer is Gary suggests, Brian Clough. Absolute scandal that he was never England manager, but the stuffed suits at the FA didn't fancy him, did they? He wouldn't toe the line, so therefore he didn't get the job, and Don Revie got it instead. And there's a big rivalry, of course, between those two. Some really good books, actually, around that rivalry, if you're interested in that period of time in football, which I am. Right then, friends, we're coming to the end of the show. Anything else to mention, boys? Stu's about to catch a train to Liverpool. AJ is also going to be on a train tomorrow to Liverpool. Anything else to mention, boys?
Thunderbirds Are Go is a surprise one for me from Busted, because I grew up with the Thunderbirds. They released a terrible, terrible film, right, in about 2004. It was appalling, but I watched it.
That's not Thunderbirds. You didn't grow up with the Thunderbirds. That was
I did grow up with the Thunderbirds. That
fantastic
is
Thunderbirds impression.
The puppets. I've watched the puppets. I had the toys. I had all of those different things. Many.
Did you make Tracy Ike from Blue Peter out of paper mache?
Do you know what Blue Peter is, AJ?
Yes, it's still going, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know.
Who's got a badge then? Has anyone got a badge?
No. That would
be a plot twist, wasn't it? No, it was actually on when I remember watching it as a kid, but I didn't really like it that much. But
it was just more school after school, wasn't it, Blue Peter?
Yeah.
It's not really a thing to do. Anyway.
That was a spot on Brains. Is he called Brains? Brilliant.
Let's just end there. Stu, anything from you? You looking forward to taking the train up? Hey, there we go.
No other questions. No other business.
Friends, there we go. So we covered quite a lot of ground today on today's podcast. If you are travelling up to Liverpool tomorrow, enjoy it. If you do see Stuart Watson, give him a hug because he's going to be an emotional wreck And obviously you can follow what's going to be an absolutely awful game of football with us if you want to. Or
abomination,
just do something else.
I believe.
Absolute abomination of game. But what is for sure, friends, is we'll be back next week to break it all down. Just a reminder, to support our sponsors, use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk. We've answered your question for you, Gary. I do agree, Brian Clough is the greatest England manager never to manage England. Also, if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that'd be great. And follow us across social media on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Have a great weekend, friends. We'll be back. Won't be Monday because it's a bank holiday. We'll be back on Tuesday to break down what happened over the weekend. So we'll speak to you again then.
It is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.